In 2005, beekeepers in the United States began observing a mysterious and disturbing phenomenon. Once healthy colonies of bees were suddenly collapsing, leaving behind empty hives full of honey and pollen. Over the following decade, widespread honeybee deaths, some of which have come to be called colony collapse disorder, or CCD, have continued to bedevil beekeepers and threaten the agricultural industries that rely on bees for pollination. Scientists continue to debate the causes of CCD, yet there is no clear consensus on how to best solve the problem. This is all discussed in the new book, Vanishing Bees: Science, Politics, and Honeybee Health. Daniel Lee Kleinman co-authored the book. He is an associate dean of the graduate school at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where he is also a professor in the Department of Community and Environmental Sociology. We welcome Daniel to the roundtable this morning. Daniel, thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you on the program. What led you to this topic and ultimately what you wanted to explore?
Good question. So actually, I met my co-author, who was a postdoctoral fellow some years ago. He had worked on wasps, paper wasps. He's an entomologist by training. And we began to talk about the increasing deaths of honeybees and their importance as pollinators. And this seemed like an important subject to tackle, one that allows us to consider huge issues around sustainability and agriculture, but also how we make knowledge about important regulatory, social, economic issues, and who we include in making those decisions, and who knows what.
We started to see this, as you say in the book, 2005, 2006. When did we start to really become aware of what was happening?
Well, I think, you know, that really was the beginning of it. There was, I think, an article in the New York Times maybe a year later about this. And really, before that time, beekeepers, and we're talking primarily about beekeepers who raise bees in order to help growers by pollinating their crops, and they get paid for this. But before 2005, 2006, beekeepers expected to have maybe 15% of their bees die every year. But that number has really doubled in recent years to something in the neighborhood of 30%, and that's now considered the new normal. And when you have cases occasionally where you have bee losses up to 90%, you know you're in a really difficult jam.
One of the things that you talk about, and I believe this still to be the case, is that when you talk about CCD, this colony collapse disorder, there are still many, many question marks out there.
Right. I mean, I think that there's among scientists, there is a wide consensus that there are multiple factors at play, that they likely interact in complicated ways, and this runs the gamut from viruses and mites to systemic insecticides. But exactly how they interact and the contributory role of each of these is a matter of some debate.
When you look at the debate, how important is that in really understanding what's going on? And for want of a better term, I guess, to boil it down to its essence of who and what to blame.
Yeah, I think the fact that there is a debate and that there is uncertainty is crucial, because as long as there is uncertainty, both chemical companies, growers, others have used this as justification for not doing a huge amount to change practices, and probably beekeepers as well. So in our book, we explore the ways in which science is typically done, where experimental designs look for decisive results, and uncertainty and ambiguity is not an acceptable answer. And I think when you have a complicated situation like this, where there are a set of complicating interacting factors, there aren't well-established, accepted methods for doing appropriate research and accepting high levels of uncertainty, and then taking action on the basis of less than perfect knowledge.
When you look at what you wanted to of taking us inside these debates and looking at the various groups and those with a stake in this, what did you learn about those various environments and how they were dealing with it? And is there enough communication between all of them to eventually move us through this period?
Well, so we take there to be a number of stakeholders, mentioned beekeepers, but also growers, scientists, the Environmental Protection Agency, and insecticide producers. And in answer to your second question, I think it was, they probably don't talk together as much as they should. They each really have different approaches to the problem. They take different kinds of evidence as decisive. Actually, not each of them is different, because I think it's fair to say that the methods I described at the beginning about the way that scientific research on problems like this is done is the accepted approach among, for example, the Environmental Protection Agency and Bayer, which is one of the focuses in our book, because they produce an insecticide that many believe plays a role in harming bees. And they're basically all saying, look, you know, it's possible that this insecticide plays a role. We're not exactly sure what the role is, how it works. And as long as we retain a certain amount of uncertainty, we're reluctant to take it off the market. Whereas some beekeepers think, you know, we should err on the side of caution. Our bees are being killed. And of course, many growers feel like they need these insecticides. So they're also reluctant to remove them from the market and remove them from their practices unless they have more decisive evidence.
You do talk about this in the book, but it's hard to know sometimes of who they is, in the sense of who is in power, who is making the decision, who's on the inside, who's on the outside, and who is just making the ultimate, who's starting the discussion, the right discussion, and ultimately solving the problem.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the last instance, right, it's on this particular issue, it's probably the federal government making the decision, but many of the groups that we're talking about adhere to the same evidentiary norms, and as long as they do so, the discussion is going to be somewhat limited. One thing I can say is that when we got done with this book, we initiated a new project where we brought together representatives from most of these stakeholder groups to engage in discussion. And one of the things that we found after we brought them together a number of times over a couple of years is they got to know one another, and they realized that they each had something to add in terms of perspective for understanding the problem. That is to say that beekeepers who are in the fields working with their hives every day actually have some knowledge that even the smartest scientist might not have, because he or she is much more removed from that situation. And so when they worked together, they were able to actually formulate problems that probably none of them would have been able to do on their own.
Let us talk for a moment of why this is so important. We've been talking about the problem, but let's talk about why it's so important and ultimately why we need the bees and why it's such a concern.
Well, so some huge number of our crops, roughly about a third of what we eat, is pollinated by honeybees. So, in other words, we use the term honeybee-dependent pollination, right? So that these crops wouldn't be available to us without honeybees. This includes everything from almonds to apples to blueberries to soybeans. And we tend to think of bees as sort of buzzing around our gardens, but actually it's a huge industry, right, where it pollination services provided by beekeepers to growers generates about $17 billion a year. And the bigger beekeepers actually truck their bees across the country. They may start in California pollinating almond groves for almond growers and then work their way to Maine to pollinate blueberries. So it's a hugely important problem, and I think really sheds the current problem sheds some light on the lack of sustainability of our current agricultural system.
Where does your optimism lie?
Well, so a second ago I talked about bringing those groups of people together.
Yes.
I think that's one source of optimism. I think if we can generate real discussion, sustained discussion among the stakeholders in a case like this, then I think that we're going to be able to, you know, make some important changes in the way agricultural production is undertaken, and I would hope, you know, ultimately develop a more sustainable agricultural system.
The name of the new book is Vanishing Bees, Science, Politics, and Honeybee Health. Daniel Lee Kleinman, I thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
And it was a pleasure being with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, Vanishing Bees, published by Rutgers University Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.